Hi there, I'm Akash, founder of Windly, where we fix allergies for life. This is Founders and Builders, where I talk to people who are working hard to bring something new and meaningful into this world.
So Sai, tell us about Seem and what you guys are doing.
Sure. So we're building an API that lets software developers control IoT devices from third-party manufacturers. So think like smart door locks, thermostats, sensors, and there's a lot of complexity to controlling these devices, communicating with them, and we abstract all of that away to give you something that ultimately resembles, you know, Twilio or Stripe in terms of simplicity, and yet is still very powerful and it allows you to interact with the physical world.
So you mentioned a few API products there. Stripe and Twilio are interesting. I almost thought of Plaid or Segment. Which do you feel is more on the nose for the problems you face when it comes to kind of these integrations?
Yeah, I mean, reasoning by analogy is always a bit tricky because it's never quite the perfect translation. But yes, Segment is good in the sense that it's integration of multiple attack surfaces into a single endpoint and then, you know, do something with it on the back end. Plaid, to me, Plaid is quite interesting for a different reason or as a good comparable. It's more the idea of providing third-party access to a private resource. So the same example here is, say I'm a resident in a multi-residential building. I can give UPS or DoorDash access to my lobby to drop off packages, food, what have you, even when I'm not home, by just effectively doing sort of an OAuth, you know, handshake and say, hey, now through Seam, you can now access this. The short answer is usually trying to use it direct, like Stripe or Twilio or Plaid or whatever analogy doesn't quite fit all the different facets, but like it's a good mental model to start going in that direction.
Cool. It's funny that you mentioned that, like a resident using this to like let a DoorDash person into their lobby or something. The product, it's like Twilio and Stripe and these kind of like API first integrations. It seems like the customer is intended to be someone either who is technical or has technical resources and knows how to conceptualize a solution built on an API. Do you find with your current customers, is it, for example, residents, is it more B2C or is it like B2B, hey, I've got a commercial building, I want to automate or mechanize like some of my operations? Who kind of gravitates towards the solution?
Yeah, today it's B2B and it's mostly startups that are offering. There's actually two groups. There are definitely startups that are more like a cylinder or like an open door, where they need to automate a piece of the physical world, of a physical space that they operate. So like granting access to your house or to an apartment unit inside of a building. What we're starting to see as well is now, this is kind of where we go almost in like the B2B2C, startups that have a SaaS offering. And as part of that SaaS offering, they would like to integrate with their users' IoT devices inside of an office space or a warehouse. I think it's going to be a big pool for us. It's kind of like the idea of the platform of platforms. I think that's a direction we're kind of pulling in. Some of the other examples, the two prior examples that you gave, you know, a more traditional company that may not have an engineering team or doesn't necessarily think in terms of API primitives. I think those guys, we're definitely seeing them today. I think there's definitely a market there. I think we're going to move in that direction at some point. Like we're sort of the API because that's just like, there's a lot of desperate need out there for something that would fundamentally work. But the goal of technology is not just to be for other technically minded folks, right? It's ultimately to kind of leverage something and make it accessible to folks that may not fully understand how that stuff works. And so I think the future of Seam, we have an API product, but it's not really an API company. It's more like an IoT automation platform where we can connect to a bunch of devices through all of our device abstractions, and then we can make certain things happen on third-party apps when a particular event happens on a device. That's the Zapier story. That's the if this, then that story. And that's fundamentally not extremely technical product, but it's a generalized interface to the physical world.
That's a generalized interface for the physical world.
That's a great soundbite.
Yeah, we started with like an API to the physical world. And the problem with API is, again, it's a little bit exclusionary, like elitist, where it's like it's only for developers. And I think that like the better description is like it is a programmatic interface to the physical world or generic programmatic interface to the physical world, because that says nothing as to what the actual implementation needs to be. It just says this is what you can do with it.
Right.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Actually, talking about that in terms of starting up, I have a little bit of background in home automation, and I've found it immensely frustrating to, like, I'm a hobbyist, obviously, I don't do it professionally. I found it immensely frustrating to connect all of the stuff in my house, whether it's Zigbee, Z-Wave, Philips, and they don't talk to each other. How did you come to realize that there was a market for this? Was it a personal itch? How did you find out that, hey, I could build something off of this kind of unified interface in the physical world?
Yeah, there's two fibers to that story. There's mine and there's also my co-founder. I think my co-founders, I mean, we went to school together and, you know, we kind of like sort of after graduation kind of went our separate ways, but like we sort of recombined later. So her point of view is very direct. She was in charge of IoT integration for Cylinder. And in that job, they had to deploy tens of thousands of door locks that were integrated with their backend reservation system across the world. It was a complete letdown in terms of, like, you know, being able to easily do that as a software engineer. I think they went through terrible struggles to kind of make that work. And I think to some extent that actually gives them an edge today compared to the other guys that are out there. For me specifically, I started my career at Nest right out of school. And, you know, I worked on the original thermostats and sort of kind of got to see the dawn of IoT for the smart home specifically. I think fast forward to like 2018, I took some time off from my previous company and I went to live in Taiwan and then also in China for a while. And when I was in China, I was primarily based out of Shenzhen. And in Shenzhen, you know, I've been going there over the years for family reasons. It's very interesting to sort of analyze the state of the technology industry by checking out the states of what's currently on sale at the electronics market in Huashengdai. And in 2018, what you're seeing is every single IoT device that you can possibly think of has been commoditized. Cameras, thermostats, everything is available off the shelf. What's intriguing to me, and again, sort of the Nest standpoint is like, yeah, but like the deployment of IoT, the sort of the idea of making these devices useful, that still hasn't happened. I'm not saying like the idea for Scene came right then and there, but at least it was very obvious to me that there were two worlds that were fundamentally disconnected. There was the hardware world, and then there was the software world of people that actually want to do things with these devices. And really the idea is like, you need to come in between it and merge those two.
So you and your co-founder were perfectly positioned to see this disconnect and this divide, right? Because she was experiencing it very viscerally in her role at Sonder. You were in Shenzhen seeing the people that were actually building the IoT devices maybe having some difficulty engaging buyers, or that at least some of those buyers' needs were not met.
The traditional sort of like OEM, ODM to some extent, out there making these devices, they do not understand what software engineers that are used to, again, Stride, Twilio, Plaid segment. They don't understand that mindset. In fact, when we have conversations with them now, very often they're like, oh, you need a gateway and you need like connection to all these devices. Oh, well, we have this thing, like, and we look at the software, I'm like, no. Like, you're gonna take our operating system image and you're gonna flash it onto this device. We want nothing to do with your software. It's a bit dramatic and bit of a short explanation of what's really going on behind the scene, but I think it's a good reflection of like the just complete disconnect between the two worlds.
That's amazing. You're looking at all these hardware devices, you're looking at tons of promise, but you're missing a small little piece of the puzzle. It's like the linchpin that connects the train and the rest of the cars. And you can be that, right? You can be the pin on that all of this turns on. That's really exciting.
I still kind of struggle to fully explain like where does scene start and where does it end, but probably the best analogy is it's a middleware, meaning that when we're starting to have conversations with really large networking equipment manufacturers, the people that sort of run your enterprise network inside of your building, your warehouse, your factory, their access point networking equipments already have many of the radios that are needed to talk to the IoT devices. What's missing is the interpretation layer of what these devices are telling you and also what you tell them. And so I think I see a world where potentially Scene comes packaged directly onto those access points that are being made by a third party. So that's kind of a middleware, you know, way of the
net.
Scene is making, you're making it seamless. Sorry, I have to.
The puns are going to write themselves. I, you know, when we started the company, we, when we kind of started working on it, like the code name of it was like Weaver, and it was not really a good name that we liked, but pretty quickly we started thinking about like, what is it that we're trying to do? And it was like analog world meet digital world. And like, we are going to be the seam between those two. And shockingly enough, there's no major tech company that I could think of that had that name. So we're like, well, we're going to take it. It's perfect. And it's all the way down into our logo. Like our logo is like the intersection of like sort of almost two origami pieces that are coming together. And that's again, like the idea of like, we're just trying to be helpful to developers, businesses by creating an interface to this very complex world that is IoT and, you know, the analog world.
Can you go into some of the detail on what goes into being that interface? You've alluded to having to write your own hardware level code and flashing some of your OS onto these devices. Yeah. I think when I first thought of Seam, what I understood is it's an API layer, and then underneath they probably have two or three very frustrated engineers writing thousands of integrations code, lines of integration code. But it seems like you're actually going even deeper than that.
Yeah, it's the deepest technical stack I've worked on. NAS, to some extent, looks pretty deep too, obviously, because we're making our own end devices, but it's a part of that. We're trying to provide an API to just about any IoT device. The one that we saw, the very specific subsegment of the market that we saw was door lock control, and specifically kind of like Zigbee Z-Wave door locks as an initial starting point. To control these devices, you fundamentally need a gateway that's nearby to bridge from the protocol Zigbee Z-Wave over to TCP, IP, HTTP, right? There's no solid product today on the enterprise side. Samsung Smart Thing is pretty good, actually, for consumers. And then there's obviously quite a few open source initiatives for hobbyists, like Home Assistant and so forth. But there isn't like something that works across 10,000 door locks anywhere in the world with 50, 100 different customer support agents that need to access that stuff and so forth. So we're like, okay, cool. Like, we got to find a gateway. And when we started thinking more about the gateways, we did our own internal E design. So we have a PCB, it's kind of like a carrier board. We slap a compute module on it. We also have some off-the-shelf white-labeled gateways that we're exploring as well. So that's kind of the hardware platform. Now, what we do is we were super fortunate to have Jordan join us back in November. Jordan used to lead GitHub Enterprise, sort of the packaging of GitHub, the entire services set of GitHub onto a VM, to then ship it to customers who have more sensitive use cases. So he sort of looked at our old stack and was like, yeah, I think we can do our own Yocto Linux implementation. And that actually allows us to run a bunch of Docker containers right at the edge, right onto the device. And that allows us to then effectively have each gateway be treated as like almost like a mini server. And that's a very powerful place to be in, because now you can run a ton of logic at the edge. You can completely decouple the thing from having to have a cloud infrastructure. And I think that's important for hobbyists who want to have privacy and security kind of built in. And so like that's why we went down the journey of like, hey, we're going to create our own OS image. It's not immediately obvious. You know, the YC advice, in fact, we've been told many times, like, you guys should just grab something off the shelf and make it work. But I think that coming from the hardware side of things, when you deploy, you know, tens of thousands of devices, like, you don't want to handicap yourself with having to maintain X thousands of legacy devices at your software layer. So if you can sort of do it right from day one, even if that takes a little bit more time, you probably should do it. So, you know, to wrap up, like, the answer for that question of like what exactly goes on, I mean, there's an operating system, there's a bunch of Docker containers running on that OS. The entire set of application, like all this device state management, all that sort of stuff, like, happens inside of the Docker containers. There's a cloud infra that also exposes an API to each of the different devices. With respect to Zigbee and Z-Wave, you're actually quite fortunate that there is already some precedence in terms of like, here are the set of instructions that a door lock or a sensor should be able to receive. From that standpoint, we don't have to write too many specific protocol bindings for our API. There's definitely quirks for each of the devices. It's fairly limited so far, but I think we have a pretty good game plan for how to deal with the, eventually we're not just Zigbee Z-Wave, we're like everything you can sort of think of, and therefore there needs to be a specific implementation for each of those. And I think we know roughly how to do that at this point.
I just have to interject. We could do an entire episode. You're, so on an embedded device, you're running several virtualized Docker containers. That's so fascinating to me.
This is the only part, I promise, where I'm going to brag a little bit because I'm so blown away by this guy, Jordan, that we have on our team. When he came on board, we said, hey, we kind of need to have our, Dockerized environments. We have unit economics for hobbyists or whatever sort of like free tier that is such that we can't really use some of the paid services out there for OTA and so forth. And so he was like, okay, yeah, we can do a Yocto, Linux distro. And then I was like, one more thing, many of these gateways are going to be connected to cellular where there is a data, there's a data constraint, like how much data sure. can consume. And so he was like, okay, well, that's interesting because now I need to do kernel updates that are not the traditional sort of, just so that everybody has context. Normally when you do an operating system update on an embedded device, you do what's, I think, generally called like an AP update or like a TiVo update, where it's like you pull down the new image and then you change at the bootloader to point to the new image, and if everything goes fine, then you can yank out the other one. Otherwise, you revert back. So if you pull down a brand new OS image, you're talking about gigs, right, of data coming down the pipe, and over cellular, it's a problem. And then you have the same set of problems at the Docker layer, right? So Jordan set up this whole thing where he's using OS Tree to sort of do, effectively, you can think of it as like Git for kernel updates. And so he's doing these micro changes at the kernel, and then he's also sort of big, he's taking the containers that we give it for the application, he strips them out, he only takes the parts of codes that have changed, he pushes them down as like a micro delta update at the kernel level. It's freaking like amazing. And I think two things are going to happen. The first thing is I think we're going to publish this work at some point. The second thing is, we're going to open source this, because like it just doesn't make sense that this sort of stuff has to be, doesn't really exist today.
Right.
Other people should be able to leverage that because it's useful for us, but it's also useful for other folks.
For anybody listening who maybe this is too deep in the weeds for them, I apologize, but this is the equivalent of upgrading parts of your car while you're driving. This is just absolutely fascinating.
Jordan is
wild.
I think one of the desires for Don and I coming into this company is we want to find, the people that we work with, we wanted to find very sharp minds with kind souls. It's actually the heuristic we go by, right? And my God, both Jordan and Sevi that we've hired recently, they sort of fit the mark and so blessed to be working with these people and just the things they do, man. I'm just like, is this possible? Like, this shouldn't be possible.
So
yeah, what you just described it's mind-blowing. That's incredible. Wow. So you take this incredible technology, and then you're going and asking the manufacturers to put it on their devices. How do those conversations go?
Yeah, so what I want to make clear. So you have the end devices, like the door locks, the sensors, et cetera. We don't need to flash those. Those are already good to go. We can communicate with them. What we do need to flash is the bridge, the gateway that we have. How do these conversations go? Well, to give you the context, most of these manufacturers that are making like off-the-shelf white label gateways are primarily in China and specifically, and then also in Taiwan. The guys making these things tend to be multi-billion-dollar company. Mm-hmm. And, when we approach them as like a no-name startup, they don't exactly acknowledge us. It's a little bit like, us going to Google and be like, hey, we need you to put this on the Google homepage. It's like, what? Who are you? But I mean, we're actually pretty fortunate that I think when we have these conversations, the OEMs kind of see us as kind of where the market is going. And so I think it's good for them to kind of try some of their beta products with us. And so I think now we have a couple of good relationships actually that I think we're going to be able to actually get a white label gateway that sort of has everything we need minus a couple of modifications on the hardware and flash it on there. And I think that the nature of the relationship is such that I think we're going to contribute back a lot of software over to them. So we have our own operating system. It's called Bantha. It's named after the Star Wars creature. And all the gateway application is called C3PO because it does translation between protocols.
Awesome.
And then we all happen to be a bunch of Star Wars nerd, which is why we'll probably launch on May 4th, right? Like May the 4th be with us. But the memes just kind of write themselves in our company. But yeah, so Bantha specifically is, this OS. And I think, all this OTA stuff that it can do over the air, that's pretty clever. I think it would be nice to give it back to the OEMs and help them actually have more secure software platforms.
That's super cool. So real quick, when you talk about your white labeled device, so a full disclaimer, Akash and I did a podcast about Seam without Seam a few months ago. And I think at the time we talked, you had some sort of hardware gateway or device. And is that different from the white label gateway you're talking about?
From a feature set standpoint, it's the same. From who's actually making it, designing it, it's completely different.
Yeah.
So we have our own design internally. I think we sort of went down that path because we were really struggling to find something that would kind of do the trick for what our customers needed. Most of the gateways you'll see out there from OEMs and ODMs tend to be too underpowered for what we need to do in terms of computing logic at the edge. Like you couldn't run Docker on most of these things. So we ended up doing our own design, but like, I think, you know, Root Venture, who is one of our main investors, we haven't really announced a round or anything yet, but you know, they have a lot of experience sort of in the software hardware junction. And Christy, specifically one of our partners who used to lead all of Apple's manufacturing for the Apple Watch, was kind of like, well, you know, I love making hardware, but if you can avoid it, that would be better. Especially for like a complex multi-radio products, those tend to be even, you know, an order of magnitude harder. And so I think that's a fine point. And so, you know, it's not easy to take an off the shelf device that we haven't designed from day one to kind of around sort of what we want to run on it, but it's probably a smarter decision. And so I think probably around the time when you guys did that first initial podcast and when Jordan kind of joined us, I think is when we really start to look at like, hey, could we target a different architecture for our operating system and frankly, a completely different hardware platform and still make this work? And the short answer is maybe, but it's still like maybe, but it's getting closer, you know, but I kind of hope it works because the base idea is like, if we make it work, if you can make, you know, if somebody's doing like a hardware startup or a pseudo hardware startup out there, if as much as possible, try to get off the shelf stuff because the process of manufacturing, supply chain, sourcing your components, all that stuff, like I'm getting a taste of it. It is not pleasant. Like it's difficult. It's very difficult.
Oh, yeah.
And on top of that, there's currently a global shortage of chips, you know, so all the lead time from sourcing any sort of components are completely out of whack. So yeah, it's just avoid it if you can.
Are you the reason I haven't gotten my RTX 3090 yet?
The TLDR here is, I think in Q2 of 2020, we shut down most of the fabs in the world because of COVID-19. And that, you know, and the world's, you know, electronics industry has decent stockpiles in general, but all of that got completely exhausted by the explosive consumer demand that we've seen for electronics because of remote learning, remote work.
Yep.
So you know, the fans are back online, they're firing all cylinders, but you know, it's just hard to keep up with all the demands, and it's affecting like people way beyond us. I think Ford or some of the auto OEMs have shut down some of the production lines because of this.
I'm just going to pause here. This is entirely my fault. This episode's been pretty tech heavy so far. Do we want to pivot into like the business side of stuff? Akash, I can actually do that.
I got it. Yeah. Well, cool. So we've talked about the product a lot here. We've talked about the magic of the product and what it really unlocks for the customers. How are you finding those customers? Well, I guess the first question is like, we've talked kind of abstractly about the customer's problems, but who is most acutely feeling this pain? Who most acutely needs Seam yesterday?
Yeah, right now, it's anybody that's trying to programmatically let somebody into a building. That's the one that I see left and right. You know, it's so simple. Like in 2021, there should be a way for you to say like, let this person in, you know, through an API and work it like, you know, anywhere in the world. And it's like, no.
So is
somehow
that,
this doesn't exist.
Is that only massive companies like WeWork or Airbnb? Are you going after these gigantic companies? Or are there smaller people that I just don't know about because I'm not in the space?
Yeah, the nature of us being like a beta product kind of in stealth, like is actually we're going after the smaller guys first. And so there are companies in your batch, actually, in your current YC batch, that are one of them specifically. There are other startups. They tend to be not operating at the scale of, you know, an Airbnb or an Open Door. You know, they're probably like one or two orders of magnitude, probably two orders of magnitude lower. But I think it's good breeding ground for us to really kind of get, you know, really understand like how we build like a great developer product. What do we need, you know, and So these are the first set of people today. Yeah, that's where the most acute thing is.
So there are people out there with a few thousand devices or a few thousand doors that need to be managed.
Yeah, and the stereotypical way by which they're effectively sort of duct taping a solution together is they'll buy like a consumer version of effectively what we're building. So Salesforce Webthing is the most common example I've seen. And then they effectively hire somebody full-time, usually in the Philippines or Malaysia, to be a human API to these devices. And what this means is like on the consumer products, like the consumer products were never meant to have 10,000 or 1,000 or even 100 door locks attached to your user account. So they have to create, you know, a different user account for each of the different door locks that they have. And then because there's no API, they have to log into an Android app and then log out. And, you know, and like every day this person receives a spreadsheet of like, hey, here are the access code that you need to program onto this door lock, or here's when I need you to open the door. And it's like, how is the state of the world? Yeah. But I mean, it's like good on them for figuring out something, because as a startup, you should do whatever it takes to make it work. But I think when you look at Dawn and her job at Sonder, you know, pretty quickly, Sonder was like, well, we kind of have to create our own solution from scratch. And it's insanity. Like, you're a hospitality company. You shouldn't have to go and create like networking gear to make this work. You shouldn't have to go create a team, right? And you know, without naming too many names and because of, you know, that confidentiality and so forth, like there are a lot of big companies doing this today, big startups that, you know, For lack of a better solution, they've had to spin up entire internal teams to go figure this out.
So right now the solution is figure out some way to hack around the existing consumer application, like the Samsung Smart Thing, I believe, which is what you described. Yeah. And that sounds very much like some of the stuff that I'm doing.
do things that don't scale. I mean, it's awesome because it gives you a false sense of security, because actually those platforms work really well for like very small fleets of IoT devices. But once you get past like a dozen, life gets hard.
Yeah. And then the other option is like spin up your internal, like spin up an internal team of a few engineers and a PM probably, and dedicate them to something that's probably not your main business.
I agree. And you know, it's like when we think about pricing for our products, I mean, I think a lot of it's still kind of up in the air, but like when you think of the alternative of, you know, if you don't use Seam, what's the alternative? The alternative is a world of pain and misery, or spending $1 or $2 million a year on sort of a core engineering team that only solves this. And it's just like, no, like this cannot be the way of things, right? There's got to be like at some point an abstraction that solves this. And to go back to the world of analogy, like I think when we were fundraising and I was explaining to investors what Seam is, the mental framework that we were trying to put investors in was like, hey, these APIs, these abstractions have created very valuable companies by virtue of externalizing access to a very complicated piece of infrastructure and make it easily accessible to developers. And so you have Stripe with payments, Twilio with telco, Plaid with banking, Seam with IoT, right?
So let's say... Let's say 5 years from now, Seam has become a household name in IoT. What does Seam look like, and what does the industry look like?
Yeah, we have a lot of internal documentation actually where we describe internally like how things are supposed to work. And I think what's kind of useful is like every time when we do our introduction or our background of a particular like piece, we always try to talk about like, why is it that we're doing this? Like, what's the outcome for the end user? I think Seam will only be useful if we reach a state where we've gone very wide in terms of the number of different types of devices we support, and also very deep in terms of the functionality that we expose for each device, right? So that's a pure like feature functionality that ultimately can take us to like a much bigger, you know, meaningfulness. For the actual like sort of the how, or like the interface itself, I mean, you know, we touched on this earlier, but like today it's an API. I think long term, we have to create like almost like a low code solution for Seam, like a Node-RED equivalent for the enterprise or something to that effect. And I already see this because we're getting inbound interest from companies that do not have engineers on staff. And these companies operate at enormous scale. We're talking like, you know, a property management company that has 100,000 single family homes throughout the United States, and they want to do water leak detection and energy submetering and so forth. And seeing doesn't have to just be for companies that have developers. It can be for these people too. We just have to figure out a way to further abstract the implementation of IoT with your third party app. I think for us, like we're you know, this is where like the Stripe or the Twilio only analogy kind of breaks down. It's like, I don't think we're going to simply be contained to just technical companies.
Yeah, that's the way you really break out, right? In your conception, 5 years from now, you have a thing. It's this little white label gateway. And you tell a property owner, hey, you plug this in, there's a web interface, and you just say what you want to do and when. And that's how this works.
You've done if this, then that for physical things. Yeah. So yeah. This might not happen in the future because we're all working remote. But next time I come back from my commute, my Instant Pot immediately turns on without having to do anything. I mean, I don't know. Maybe that's far-fetched, but maybe not.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to be touching consumer stuff too much, but mostly because like it's a pretty competitive/well-served space right now with like sort of, you know, Google Home and Alexa. But on the enterprise side, the typical example I see right now is when a flood detector is triggered inside of a single family home, automatically go create maintenance tickets in the property management platform, whether that's AppFolio or Yardi or what have you. So I think that's really like, you know, I think these like Zapier or if this and that type of solution have a time and place. And I think like our time and place, our context, mm-hmm. is the physical world.
Is there?
Yeah, and there's stuff.
Go ahead, Zan.
Oh, I was just going to say, and there's stuff too, right? If you're a property, talking about you're a property manager with 100,000 homes with leak detection, you know, with cameras, with, you know, all these kinds of monitors, all they need to know is that many of these property managers are handy, right? Or they have people who can install stuff physically. The development part's what they're missing. So there's a solution potentially in the future from what you're saying. You can tell someone, hey, just take this physical thing, plop it in the basement, set it up in the web interface, and you're good to go. You'll have leak detection. That's awesome. That's a really cool path forward.
Well, before we wrap up, is there anything you want to tell the listeners, Sai?
I always really like to have conversations, including with hobbyists, like people that are not businesses, to sort of see like what problems are out there that people need us to solve for them semi-urgently. So if you have something like this, like feel free to reach out. Can I also talk about my meme?
You can talk
generator.
About whatever you want, man. The floor is yours.
So before we started recording, I was saying that I'm a big heavy user of meme generators online, right? Like this base image where you can sort of capture your own text. Now I want somebody to make the equivalent of that for short video snippets from like movies or what have you, but like where you can edit the text of what the actors are saying with like a deep fake, and you can completely change the dialogue and apply it to whatever sort of context you're currently talking with. That's my desire for the future of memes. It's an important product to build. So, yeah.
What's the prize? Do I get a Seam T-shirt if I make this?
You get $1 billion, my friend. That's the next billion. I'm surprised YC hasn't funded this yet. Maybe this. Yeah, yeah. Maybe this year another RFP, like entertain the world and help it communicate more.
Cool.
Thank you so much.
This episode of Founders and Builders is brought to you by Windly. At Windly, we fix allergies for life with personalized treatment plans that train your body to ignore your allergies. Our doctors use an FDA-approved treatment, allergy immunotherapy, to train your immune system to ignore its allergy triggers. By exposing you to naturally occurring allergens in gradually increasing doses, we fix the root cause of your allergies. Plus, the entire Windly experience is convenient and easy, with telehealth visits and medicine sent right to your door. You never have to go to a doctor's office. If you want to live without allergies, then visit Windly.com. That's Windly.com. Remember, life's better without allergies. Thanks for listening to Founders and Builders. Make sure to subscribe and share this episode with a friend. You can find more episodes at akash.io. That's AAKASH.io. Or just find Akash on Twitter.